ojos para ver lo que está
pasando. Put up your manos. Members of Tempting, Unidos, Chicanos, Latinos en los Estados Unidos. Don't care if you're Ricans or even Cubanos. Look at the coaches. We have more work coming. Don't let them divide. These suckers are vultures. Either we standing together or better be standing aside. Now is the time. Don't know about you, but I'm gonna ride. We gotta climb. Fight for your values, man. Where was your pride? Where were the gunners that you got inside? Look how our ancestors came to this country. They tried to be living the American dream. Don't throw it away. They promised you money and got you raging for the machine. Pick a new team. You bless us to listen, but that is a system that you wanna bring. You need to think. We gotta fight communism, cause it look like we on the brink. Connect on the links. A one party system is taking the power from all of the people. We need to think. When will you listen? These people are evil and won't treat us equal. So what is your plan? Hand in hand, we're standing together, cause this is what never to do what you can. Please understand, we gotta do better, so walkers remember that we took a stand. Escúchame. 24 es el año, si se puede. Lucha, lucha por la libertad. Órale, vamos.
Yo. Oh, where'd Christine go?
He went.
That was a surprise. There you are. Disappeared. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Latino Free Minds, episode number 58. Here we go. Another episode, which we're calling Know Your Candidate. And for this episode, we have Peter Hernandez back on the show. We've had him on before, and, you know, it was only right to have him on again during this Know Your Candidate series. He's running for U.S. Congress, District 18 in California. Peter, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Daniel. Thank you, Christian and Daniel, for having me back. It's been a busy time on the campaign trail, you know, working really hard, getting our name out. We actually have a consultant, so we're targeting. We're doing a lot of focused targeting. I mean, at the end of the day, we're the only Republican in the race in this heavy district, Democrat district, but right now, with all the excitement, the expectations, I make it through the primary, but we're not taking it for granted. I'm targeting the Latino districts, the Latino community, going, you know, having an honest heart-to-heart conversation, actually going to the district, talking to the voters, and talking to the Latino Democrat voters. I'm not running away from those that we want to win over, right? I want to earn their trust. So my goal is to actually have a face-to-face. If they have any questions, I'm right there in front of them. I mean, I know that I have the right convictions. I understand what representation looks like. And as I've had these conversations so far, roughly 90% of these voters, a lot of these conversations not only are in Spanish, but they're Democrat voters. And they're telling me, yes, I will vote for you, because I ask them that hard question. After this conversation, do you feel confident? Will you commit to voting for me in the March 5th primary? And they said, yes, I'll vote for you.
That's awesome. It's awesome to hear. So, you know, what has your pitch, not your pitch necessarily, but like, you know, what are you telling them as far as like, you vote for me, this is what's going to happen, or this is what I'm going to focus on? What has been your main message to those people in those conversations?
The initial intent, honestly, Daniel, is after I knock on the door, I just introduce myself, and I try to leave it very open-ended, because I don't know where they're at. I don't know if they're too busy, they're with their kids, or they're doing the laundry, or they're getting ready to leave. So my goal is more about seeing, kind of just really paying attention to the environment that I'm walking into. Mm-hmm. And really the biggest thing is, my name is Peter Hernandez. I'm running for Congress, and I want you to know who your candidate for Congress is. You know, and I said, I'm here because I want to earn your vote. And I just leave it open-ended like that and let them talk. You know, some people give me short conversations, some people long, you know, a lot longer. But at the end of the day, most people, which is the reality of what I've always realized, even when I served in local office, you knock on someone's door, that's already a huge sign of respect. If you talk to them and give them their, you know, there's nothing more valuable than time. We can never get it back. So when you give someone their time, your time, they realize you're seeing them as a valuable person, and you're valuing that person, and they're appreciative of it. And they find themselves basically usually pretty grateful. I actually had one lady that after I talked to her brother, I was walking into the next house. Her brother came out and I'm sorry, his sister came out. She came out and she's like, Peter, and she called me down. I was a little ways down her house. And she's like, hey, are you Peter Hernandez? And I said, yeah, I am. And she was like, awesome. Can I, she, I thought she was going to grill me or something. But she just said, can I take a picture with you? I've heard a lot about you. And I said, praise God. Like, that's pretty awesome that people are getting to hear about me. They're seeing that I'm the real deal. I'm not just some picture in somewhere. I don't like being called a politician. So if at any way possible, I try to present myself as a public servant, someone that's there to listen and not to necessarily tell them what to do. Because everybody has different lived experiences. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where people are at. I'm just there more to listen and to engage them.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And that's why, you know, we're doing what we're doing with having a bunch of candidates on this next month, these next 2 months, is, you know, people don't usually get to meet their candidate. You know what I mean? You know, here's the thing. It's not hard to get a hold of you guys. So people just have to reach out. But I don't know if people have that kind of mentality of like, oh, like, you know.
He wears a suit.
yeah. How am I going to get a hold of him? But yeah. You know, that's the one thing that's been pretty cool. You're all easy to get a hold of. You guys, you know, respond back, and you know, as you're doing these the canvassing and all that in your campaign, and you talk to these people, has there been like one thing in common that they're all concerned about? Is there like a major issue or two that the county that you're representing that they're like, we don't like this, or we're worried about this?
I would say in general, it's the cost of living, inflation. You know, I mean, the Latino community, a big portion of them are middle to low income. They're just trying to figure out how to get by. They're, you know, you go to these minority neighborhoods, you know, my neighborhood, right? Because that's where I came from. This is how I was raised, San Mateo County in Hollister. I know you're seeing, when you walk up to a house and you see four cars or six cars in that house, you know that there's a struggling family there. You know, it's funny because people say, hey, what's the secret sauce to winning an election? Pay attention. Listen to your voters. Get to know them. Actually care about what they care about. Mm-hmm. I mean, the founders were pretty profound that they established our constitution and our form of government to where the average person is supposed to be the candidate for office. Not this elite intellectual, this monarch or noble that has a ton of money and a ton of influence. That's not our system. That's what we were running away from. Mm-hmm. And honestly, as a Christian man, just my honest conviction is the strength of not only the Constitution and ultimately our country is first God, but second, it's the people themselves. The people are the centers of power and influence. When you're up on the dais and you're making a statement about something that you have a strong conviction about, there's nothing better, and I've experienced this. This is why I think it's pretty awesome that God has put me in this position. There's nothing better than actually being on the dais and sharing truth in the midst of that environment when you know you're going to get opposition, and then the public is ready to back you. There's nothing more profound, because then you know not only does it resonate with your district, with your community, with your voters, but it ultimately has an impact on the actual power structure on that dais when you're making your statement and you're trying to ultimately argue your case and show how what you're pushing forward makes sense for the constituency. Mm-hmm. And then and these elected officials look at each other and they look at me and they say, yeah, I gotta pay attention, because obviously the public is paying attention. And if they're supporting Peter, then I've actually had it to where there's times when my fellow board flips on an issue because of the amount of turnout and the amount of influence and the amount of engagement from the voters, from the public.
Mm, that's good.
So it's been a while since we sat down that last time at, you know, Heavenly Bakery. And oh man, shout out Heavenly Bakery.
Amen. Beautiful place, beautiful business owners, awesome people.
It's so good. Yeah, they're so awesome. I just took my girlfriend there the other week. So
awesome.
Yeah. How has it changed at all? Are the issues still the same? I know you mentioned, you know, just the whole economy in general, but has the attitude changed? You know, we were coming out of a pandemic, the plandemic,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Now, you know, what's the attitude now? Now that we had a little bit of more Biden during that time, what is the Latino or the Hispanic community, you know, responding back with now?
Well, one is there's definitely this sense of remorse for the decisions that were made during that time where we shut down businesses, 20,000 of them, or I think it was more like 46,000 in California, 20,000 of them never came back. You know, the fact that we forced people into a position of compliance with these heavy-handed rules that were very top-down, there was a lot of loss of revenue for local governments. There was obviously the negative implications of this virus, more so actually the forced vaccination of folks, right? There was just so much, you know, so there's a lot of remorse. It's funny because, and you know how I know this, Christian, because no one talks about it anymore. They don't bring it up. There's just silence in the room. There's like, they can't argue the case, which is funny because this is why, I mean, politics is hard. In general, you got to always have that mindset that when you're in, you're technically an outsider. You're not an insider, right? If anybody acts like they like you, that they're buddies with you, they really, hey, they think, Peter, you're a really smart guy. Oh my God, you have an awesome, you know, whatever they say, it just goes right past me. Because they're only friends with you because of the position that you hold, because of the influence that you hold. It's not an honest, you know, I lean on just the reality that God is my ultimate provider. And then the closest relationships that matter are my family and my close friends prior to ever getting elected. But as far as the issues, to your point, there's definitely this sentiment now of remorse, because when you have troubled times, and this is why I think it's really profound. Think about what, you know, 2020, or what is it, just before 2020, technically the economy was still doing good. Technically, there was a lot of good things happening. We were, you know, just ending the Trump presidency. So the economy was booming. There was a lot of good things happening. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is there's a profound sentiment, I think, in the Declaration of Independence that says men will suffer evils while evils are sufferable. That's always stuck with me, because it's very easy to be complacent, to kind of let things roll off of your back, right? You don't care as much. Yeah, this is probably not a good idea, but hey, you know, maybe they're doing it for the right reason, so we're going to trust them. There's that sentiment. It's not that way anymore. Now it's like a lot of anger, a lot of frustration. I mean, people are losing their homes. They have to take an extra job because they can't afford their life just to pay the bills to get by. You know, businesses are struggling. The inflation rate, everything's gone up 30 to 40%. You know, my last home that I canvassed in Salinas, California, the lady that I spoke to said, hey, she's a Democrat. She was ultimately acknowledging that she was a Democrat. She's a citizen, but she's worked a long time and she's paid her taxes. And basically, she was just saying, look, I worked really hard. I paid my taxes in. And then I'm getting home after going to the grocery store. And I see on the TV this president from the White House who's telling me that the economy is doing good and my life should be doing better. While I came home and I couldn't bring home eggs and I couldn't bring home meat. She told me in Espanol, no pude comprar huevos, no pude comprar carne asada. She's like, es mentiroso. She was telling me, this guy's a liar. And I'm like, and I think the day and age that we're in, when it comes to political environment, just even kind of running in these circles a little bit, it's really, really frustrating to me, because they take these people for granted. They take them like they're dumb. They actually depend on low information voter. If you think about it, they depend on people to not really understand. And they've kind of, to a certain extent, you can probably argue, intentionally made the environment extremely complicated, right? Bills are 300 pages long. You know, I know when I was a supervisor, my agendas, some of these agenda items, just individual items, had hundreds of pages in there. And you're supposed to read all of that in 1 week and understand it and understand, you know, there's legislative authority, right? There's, you know, there's liability with the attorneys. There's all these layers that you have to consider when you're reading this information. How it applies, what are the potential impacts. And you're supposed to somehow make a good decision after 7 days of getting the Fed of this information. It's just not an easy. So if it's hard for us, can you imagine for the average person? This is why I think, this is why I guess the last thing I'll say is this is why I think we're called to be watchmen on the wall. When we get elected, we're not there to represent government. We're there to represent the people and to do our job. And that means hold it accountable. And sometimes, honestly, sometimes put government on its heels and make them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
No, I mean, as you're telling that story about talking to that lady and, you know, saying what she sees on TV versus what she's seeing in reality isn't adding up, you know? And that's another thing, you know, we've been telling people, and, you know, you can see the little logo on the bottom. We're telling people, vote your reality. Because there's a lot of things that, like, yeah, you'll see the ads, you know, you'll see the Biden ad saying everything's great. You'll see the Adam Schiff ad where he's saying he brought, I don't know when he brought housing to California, but you know what I mean? You'll see his ads and, oh man, it sounds nice. But it's like, you step outside, you know, it's nothing like what they said in that commercial. The reality that I'm living through is nothing like that gaslighting or that picture they're painting in when they're on TV, when they're in front of a microphone. So, you know, that's what, you know, why we want people to get to know their candidate, but also up to them to get informed and also vote their reality as far as what is life really like. Has the results been achieved, right? If you voted for something because they promised you this, this, and that, did they achieve that? Is your reality better or did it get worse? And then in that case, you know, you can decide if you think your reality is amazing right now as it compared to, let's say, 2017, 18, then okay, I guess you can continue this route. But if you look back to those years and you compare it to these years and you go, no, my reality isn't better, things have gotten way worse, then maybe it's time to make a, you know, change in the way you vote, you know. And it's not necessarily telling you who to vote for, but at least considering other options.
That's right. And that's actually a point. Well, I think that's a simple way of putting it, because most people, I would argue most people are obviously really living a tough reality, which means they're going to have to vote that way. They might have to vote differently.
Yeah. Make it relatable to them.
Well, it's for me, it's just crazy how, you know, we want to see the reality. People do want to see the reality, and people can kind of see it through a little shroud, and they kind of can grasp onto something, and then it gets obscured again, you know. And the question that I got left over, you know, this week was, you know, is the NFL a branch of the government with all the propaganda that they're hitting me with left and right? You know, and if you only caught a little bit of those commercials and you see, oh man, somebody's washing somebody's foot. Oh man, Jesus did that. And you walk away, you think, oh man, that was a nice commercial. But it's the same message again. Daniel, you said gaslighting. It's the same message that my president Biden is saying. Hey, let's all forget about what I said. Let's all forgive each other. Let's all get back together. Forget about the fact that I said it's going to be a cold winter for all you guys that didn't get vaccinated. A cold winter of death. Right. Don't worry about that. Let's get together. And you know what? If you don't take my word for it, listen to the NFL, you know?
That's right.
That's kind of, you know, what I got. It's people are trying to see the reality, but when you got the government and you got them on the social media, on Facebook, as we see in everything during the pandemic,
that's right.
They're making it real hard for the normal, the normie, right? Like the regular civilian, like you and me, to be engaged and be able to know your candidate. You know, they make it hard. Yeah.
You made a really good point, Christian. I think it kind of begs the question is, you know, we become armchair quarterbacks when we're watching our favorite football team. When are we going to become armchair quarterbacks of the policy decisions that are happening on the House floor, on the Senate floor, the committee hearings? I know for me, it's definitely a spectator sport also, not just an, you know, I've not just lived it as a policymaker, but it is, you're paying attention to who's making these decisions, why, what is the connecting fibers, like what is the interest in funding a different country when your own country's falling apart? And I think to a certain extent, that's what they're not even realizing that they're creating, because I'm meeting many more very smart people like you guys that are honestly paying attention. And you're like, hey, wait, I just saw that. Wait, you're telling me that I'm supposed to believe you when I just saw that you made a decision? You know, you're telling me that I shouldn't be voting against Mayorkas being impeached, and you're saying that there's no shred of evidence, and I'm just referencing an article I read today. When the border is open and you have 2 million official illegal immigrants crossing that border, and there's tons more gotaways. We just had this Honduran who I guess claimed to be transgender that just shot up Joel Osteen's church. right? And there's collateral damage with this little girl, I guess, that was part of that shooting. And the media is not talking about it, right? So, and you know, like with a lot of the stuff that Joe Biden does, it's like they say it right now, they capture it in time because they think it's smart. But the moment that time passes and they realize, like, hey, that's probably not a good idea what we said prior, all of a sudden they memory hole it, right? They hide it. They don't mm-hmm. want it brought back. They want to act like they never said it. If it was divisive, now all of a sudden they're trying to be unifying, like somehow that's always been their track record. It's just they're expecting people to just have a short memory span. It kind of, in my last point, it kind of makes it to the reality that the House and the Senate, all these politicians, they get elected. In the beginning, they probably make stronger decisions. Once it's re-election time, they get really soft and weak. And if they make decisions that are against the very public that they're supposed to support, they'll do it at the beginning of getting reelected because they know it won't be popular to make that decision when it's time for reelection. If they want to get reelected, they got to be careful about those votes then because they realize, hey, the people will forget. It was a while back. I'll get voted in again as long as no one brings it up.
Right. The people will forget. And if they don't forget, we just show them, hey, look who's the candidate. You want a liar like me or you want that orange guy?
Yeah. It's crazy. These guys are and that's why. I mean, I'm. To me, again, it gets back to the strength is the people. I want the people to be more informed than I am. I mean, to a certain extent, I depend on the value of the public. When I'm brought forward the informed consent resolution, I had people bringing me a bunch of data to support it, and it became a big influence. I actually had when I brought forward that resolution. It just reminded me that we had doctors, we had engineers, we had very credentialed people, because that's another component. If you get an average people to run for office, a small business owner like myself, you know, there's definitely a learning curve. But if you have people on your side that are doing that care about you doing it for the right reasons, and all of a sudden you have a very, you know, like for me, I've actually developed relationships with people that have worked in energy that know about hydrocarbons and understand fracking and the technology behind it and even the comparisons of us being our own energy producers versus other nations. Like they understand that that's their background. That's what they live. Nothing better than to bring in a professional that is on your side, that is willing to tell the truth, that wants to inform you in the accurate way so that it cleans you up in your understanding and helps you to be a better decision maker. And that's what I was starting to develop, which at that point made me definitely a lot better. A lot more educated and more well-versed on the issues. So, so the average person can become very, very capable and strong with the right team around him or her.
Yeah, that's very true. So as far as your district, right? I think have you noticed any difference in Santa Clara County?
As far as the support or the voter, like what?
Just support or like any feedback from there? Because, you know, Santa Clara County is probably like as far as the districts that are part of this, counties that are part of District 18, that's probably one of the most liberal ones.
Mm-hmm.
So is there, what have you kind of been hearing or seeing there? As far as like, is there any shift? Are people kind of, you know, maybe opening up more about like, we need change? You know what I mean?
Well, actually, I, you know, without giving up too much of the strategy, I've actually had, different groups of people coming up and all of a sudden sending me messages saying, hey, by the way, you officially got endorsed. We're going to be promoting your stuff and it would be a certain group of a certain ethnicity or, you know, there are a certain segment of issues that they care about. So there's definitely a growing support. And actually I do have the grassroots because if you think about the grassroots, they're kind of, rough and tumble, right? If you think about the Tea Party days where, you know, it's like there was a lot of this energy. They wanted to see change, but they really didn't understand the system, right? The party system and how things work. But now they're more organized. I would argue they're actually better organized than the typical central committees. and they're game planning. You know, they're actually coming up with ways to fund their game plan. There's a lot more energy at the ground floor to support candidates like me, and I'm seeing it. You know, I'm actually hearing from folks that it's like, hey, we just sent out a, you know, we just started sending out canvassers or whatever and helping you in your campaign or whatever. So it's been pretty awesome to see the ground floor change, which I think is the hardest to measure, but in a way that's probably good, right? Because then, you know, your opponents obviously aren't able to keep up with what you're doing.
Yeah, that's true. When you talk to people, do they even know who Zoe Lofgren is?
The people that do don't like her, at least the ones that I've talked to, and I'm not just, you know, and just for a little full disclosure, I'm not just talking to Republicans. I really am not. I'm talking to Democrats, even in my own county, and they're like, yeah, we need her out. And for different reasons. I mean, I guess the simplest way to put it is when you talk to a voter, whether let's assume they're Democrats that you're talking to, it's not a simple, like, they're very left, they're very liberal, therefore they only care about social issues. It's not that simple. I've actually met progressives that have strong values that are line up with me in the sense, like, I'll give one example. I've always pushed for bottom-up government. Obviously, that's where I came from. So I've actually had folks say, hey, we're having an issue with our communities, our rural communities, becoming this huge urban center. I mean, we're very close to Santa Clara. For those that don't know, Congressional District 18 is connected to Santa Clara County. Santa Clara is Silicon Valley. That's tech central. So that amount of wealth and power and you know, technology and advancement is obviously beneficial to that region, but it has a negative impact to a certain extent because they need people. And I mean, they need houses for the people that they employ. So those people start buying houses in my region, but we've started to become a bedroom community. So there's a lot of people buying houses here, living here, but they're not keeping their kids in the schools here. They're not spending money locally. They're actually spending money where they're working because they're there for work all day. You know, I've heard many stories about, you know, that's kind of where they go there, do their grocery shopping and all their money planning. So it becomes a negative drain on our resources, right? Because we still require to fix the sewer when it breaks or the water system, the infrastructure. So the roads get beat up, right, from people driving in and out. So you have folks locally that are saying, you know what, we're tired of people building houses, but you have the state pushing for housing. They're wanting to develop in all these rural communities. So that changes the sentiment because it's, you know, when you're talking to their very own Democrat leadership, they're like, hey, what are you guys doing? They're like, oh, just sit down and shut up kind of thing. Like, we're not going to, you know, we're pushing for increases in housing. So, yeah. So you have the locals saying, you know what? I think we need to change gears because maybe a Peter Hernandez actually cares about preserving local control, preserving the rural sentiment, actually cares about making sure that we have the infrastructure that we need, maybe coming up with new opportunities. I'm a business guy. I mean, I've been pushing always for commercial development, things that are create jobs, increase in job pay, right? So I've been pushing for that since I was a supervisor. So all of a sudden I become way more appealing to even people that don't necessarily are of the same party as I am.
Yeah, that's good, man. That's good. Like you said, everybody should hear, right, from either candidate, both sides. Get to know them, get to know what they're about, because what you don't want to do is, like I said it on yesterday's show, is you don't want to look for the D, you don't want to look for the R, and then just vote for that. Or you don't want to look for a name that sounds familiar, right? Which, you know, some people do that too, be like, oh, okay, it might help you in this case. maybe.
So here's the thing. There's a big distinction between a party loyalist and someone that has the values of the party, right? I think I can get along with someone that has maybe Democrat values. I might not vote their way. I definitely wouldn't support a lot of the crazy stuff that they push, social issues type of stuff that I think is doing a lot to divide our community. But I would definitely support things that are practical, you know, local control measures, things like that. So my point is, there's some people that are very party loyal. That's kind of like you know, you're protecting the machine. That's where there's just a lot of gray in how things happen, because people will make decisions that are more party beneficial than they are actual values consistent. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I would, again, this is why I believe in the wisdom of the people. There's actually a profound verse that I lean on a lot that says there's wisdom in the counsel of many. Once you start to connect the dots and how many people are repeating the same thing, that they're saying, well, we all care about our voice to be included in this process. We care about local control, right? Things that you're seeing like, hey, so that this is an opportunity for unifying. Then all of a sudden people start to get excited when they hear someone like me saying, look, I'm going to do what I can to make sure that no Republican or Democrat takes away your local authority. I will not support the party. I don't care if they kick me out. That's their choice. At the end of the day, I have accrued a level of influence, and by God's grace, I'm going to use it to the benefit of the district. If we are consistent, that's what's going to win over voters. If we are consistent in providing solutions, that's what's going to win over the support that we need. And that's what's going to create, I think, the outcomes that are necessary to preserve the interest of our nation. That's just the reality. So truth is always truth, no matter who says it. A Democrat might speak truth sometimes. A Republican might speak truth sometimes. Party loyalty sometimes complicates those things, and they're willing to it's the ends justifies the means, right? They push for things that might be contradictory, and they might be okay with it because of the fact that it's more about the party than it is about the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you kind of get that feeling, right? Especially with our current, you know, when you talk about either Congress or Senate. I mean, Senate today, right? Passing the bills for aid to Ukraine, Israel, and oh my God, I forget who the other one is.
Is Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan?
Okay, yeah.
And it was framed as a border bill initially, which mm-hmm. is crazy. Like, they were like, hey, we're going to address nothing about the border. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, this is one thing that I don't know if you guys even heard. They actually tied the hands of whoever gets elected the next president, that if that would be a cause for impeachment if they basically don't implement that bill. It'd be a violation of the bill. Therefore, they would be. So it would position, if President Trump gets elected or reelected, then he would basically become impeached by default by not implementing the fund, you know, ultimately the administration of the funding. Because that's, you know, as a president, he's over the administrative agencies and he directs them. So mm-hmm. if he didn't do it, that would be a cause for impeachment. So if you're doing what's actually best for your own country in the bill, it's still written in there that it doesn't matter what's best for the country. What matters is that you send that money to Ukraine, that you send the money, overseas, even though our own country's falling apart.
That's America last.
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny because I get beat up on that. Like, people say, honestly, there's not much that I can say to people when they start gawking me like that. I just kind of, I get that cold face about it because it makes no sense. Anybody mm-hmm. who says that, you know, it's like, hey, you care about, you don't care about immigrants, Peter, because you want to shut down the border. Actually, I do care. I don't know any immigrant that would agree that you tear down your fence in your house, right? If you agree with open borders, then tear down your fence. Oh, and by the way, if you don't have a fence, then it doesn't matter if they go in through your back door. How about you let them in through your back door? And by the way, you can't know who they are. You have no right to know who they are if
leave your door unlocked.
Yeah, leave your door unlocked. Doesn't matter who they are, friend or foe, don't worry about it. Hey, you're caring about the immigrant, so leave your back door open. Mm-hmm. The moment that you do that, then I'll say you're at least true to your values. But if you're saying you care about preserving a boundary around your own house, you know, but you don't care about preserving the boundary around our own country, then you're a hypocrite.
I've got a neighbor who doesn't have a fence. He's the only guy with grass, but he doesn't got a fence, you know? And every day I watch this big old German Shepherd come on up. I want to walk right up to his grass and look around and let the dog do his due, you know? And that's kind of, you know, almost a metaphor to what's going on today, you know? it's all out in the open for everybody else to enjoy.
Right.
And they're not taking care of it the way the owner is. The owner's out there watering his grass, cutting his grass, fertilizing his grass, doing everything he has to do for somebody else to reap, you know, his benefits. Only grass on the block. But, you know.
Well, it's and so it just proves the point that, yeah, you're even you're no one's going to be basically anti their own self-preservation. No one's going to do that. No one's going to say, hey, I'm okay with you coming in here and doing whatever you want in my house. Right. Doesn't matter if you violate my family. Doesn't matter if you hurt my kids. Who's going to say that? No one's going to say that. But they'll always extend the issue way out far in a very complicated environment and make it very hard to disseminate and ultimately attach a lot of emotion to it. And then all of a sudden call you a bigot or a racist or whatever, an anti whatever, because you don't agree. And I'm like, well, let's bring it down to the simple reality. Your open borders, tear down your fence, open up your back door, and you have no right to question anybody coming in through your back door.
Yep. And my neighbor puts a fence up. The first thing they'll hit him is, aren't you thinking about the dogs? Where are the dogs going to go? Where's, you know, it's always, yeah, it's never quite the actual issue that they you know, use it to. They obscure it again.
Yep. Yeah. And it's just, and it's kind of, it's always been a pee for me, guys, that I don't care if the public knows little to nothing about politics. They know what self-preservation looks like. They know what it means to have dignity in work. They know what it means to care for your family and to make sure that they're cared for. There's basic natural inclinations that all humans have, even whether you're religious or not religious, regardless. The reality is there's certain inclinations that people have. And when you lean on those inclinations, then you understand not only you have a better understanding, not that I have a perfect understanding, but you have a better understanding of human nature, and you have a better understanding why policies have to make sure that they preserve the, you know, what God calls the imago Dei, the image bearer, right? The preservation of the individual. If you look at any government or any country that has destroyed itself or destroyed others in the process, it's because of ultimately a lack of self-preservation, right? And there's certain things that preserve the, you know, the nature of humanity, right? Self-control, meekness, humbleness, kindness, and to a certain extent, respecting the natural law that God gave us, right? The order in life that God established. So I try to think things through a very principled lens. And if there's not a foundation to what you're telling me, then yeah, you can stand on shaky ground if you want, but I'll let you walk. I'll stand over that quicksand yourself. I'm sorry if that's what your desire is, to stand over quicksand. I'll pull you out if you want me to, but I'm not going to stand there with you.
Yeah. So yeah. You know. We've been focusing a lot on local candidates, right? You know, especially like, and not necessarily just where we are, right? We're talking to local candidates in different areas so that hopefully people get to know more about them. And I think the thing with you, Peter, it's like, even though you're local, right, to us, as far as, you know, you're near us, you're representing a district that, you know, we grew up in. So we've seen the, how can you say, we've seen the decline, right? Mm-hmm. From when we were kids to, you know, every time I go back to San Jose, you know, as an adult now, I don't like going back. You know, I don't like it at all. You know, there needs to be a lot of changes in that city overall, right? But yeah. You know, but if people don't know their candidates or don't know what people are running on, then you see how they end up with this constant Democratic majority or just, you know, the same, you get the same people reelected over and over and over, yet nothing's changed, nothing's been improved. So, and I think the thing about you, like I was saying, you're local, but you're running for US Congress. Yep. So you know, for anyone listening, it's like, yeah, maybe Peter doesn't directly represent you in your county, but, you know, you could still support Peter, because when he's in Congress, more than likely he's going to vote to represent your values, right?
The country.
You know what I mean? Represent the country. And that's one vote, even though he's in his district, but it's one vote for the country, for the people.
All right.
So, you know, it's all good. So that's why, you know, when it comes to U.S. Congress, like, it's so important that everybody in this country that has heard of Peter Hernandez actually, you know, tries to help you to get in that position, because you never know, right? You could, by one vote, you know, we say that all the time, voting matters, especially in Congress. You know, it could be one vote that derails a really bad bill, but guess what? Boom, it was Peter. Peter did it. So I think that people got to realize that even though it's not my, you know, you're not my district, it's like, well, yeah, I could still support Peter, because when he goes and votes in Congress, you know, chances are he's going to represent what I want too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Mayorkas's vote, by the way, guys, was one vote difference. Okay. 214 to 213. The impeachment happened because of one vote.
One vote.
Without that one vote, it would have gone down. So, yeah, you're right. And it's funny because I've obviously been campaigning for a while now, since February. And, you know, there's another scripture in the Bible that I just was reminded of is do not despise small beginnings. There's a learning curve in politics. And that, you know, I've mentioned that earlier. Since I've been campaigning, when you're in it for the right reasons, you learn a lot. You know, not only do I pay attention to these decisions that are being made, I'm talking to different folks. I'm learning from folks, even donors that I've been talking to. And, you know, you get to hear the sentiments. So my point in mentioning that is that becomes a big influence in filtering your process on what it means to engage people that might have a differing opinion from you and how to win them over. So, so you get better at understanding the issues. You get better at articulating the issues. And ultimately, I think you get better at standing firm on what policy decisions you're going to be making, because you've thought through them pretty, you know, you've been very prudent in considering all these issues and making sure that you understand them well enough to make a healthy decision, a good decision. And I think, you know, the hard part about like Congress is especially the older folks. Oh, here's a stat that I think is kind of revealing. Most of the folks in the Senate, when it came down to that supposed bipartisan, it was supposed to be a border bill, but it ended up turning into a funding bill. Mm-hmm. Most of the Republicans that supported it were over 70 years old, over 70 years old. Tell me how many of them actually care, if their kids go to war, right? Like they're in retirement mode. Right. I doubt any of them have 20-year-old kids. They're probably in their 40s or 50s. You know, it's going to be the 20-year-old kid that's going to go to war, God forbid. So it just points to the reality that these folks not only aren't paying attention to the majority of the sentiment, the actual voters, they're just leaning on this inside baseball kind of stuff behind the scenes, trying to work out deals, having nothing to do with representation. It just really makes the case that there needs to be a new class of a congressperson, younger, that has skin in the game, that understands the issues because they're living those issues, and they can ultimately make sure that when they're up there making these decisions, that when someone says to them, hey, we need to vote for this funding bill for Ukraine, I'm like, I am not going to give money to another country when my own country's falling apart. Don't even knock on my door in Congress. I don't want to hear you come into my door if you're going to ask for that.
Yeah. We'll be there. We'll be at the door. We'll be the door guys.
Yeah. I'll have you guys be my door guys. Yeah. It's just, you got to draw a line and say, no, we're not moving. We're not moving.
Yeah. What you're saying, right, about that, it's like nothing was more proof of that than, and I'm like 99.9% sure what I'm about to say is a fact. Nothing proves that more than Dianne Feinstein voting the day before she died.
Oh, that's crazy.
Nothing like, and I forget what it was she voted on, but the fact that she voted on something the day before she passed, it just goes to show you, kind of, it ties in a lot of the things we've been talking about, where they're voting for the party. They got no skin in the game. It's like, you know, I don't wish that on anybody. She was an old age. She passed away. She lived a long life. But, you know, whatever she voted for didn't affect her. Yeah. You know, it could have been a real terrible bill or law and voted for it. And she doesn't suffer any of the consequences of it. So, like that, if someone wanted like a proof of what you were kind of talking about right now, like, there you go. That just happened recently.
Yeah. I mean, you would see the clips where she's just sitting there with her milky gaze and she's just looking all out, and then it's her turn to vote, and then she starts rambling and somebody goes, hey, Kaisen, just say yes. Just say yes. Stop. Kaisen, just say yes.
Wow.
Yes. You know?
Yeah. And that's the thing too, right? You had Feinstein, she passed. You know, you had Mitch McConnell, where he kind of had a couple instances where he kind of froze up.
Yep.
I think
the current sitting president.
Well, yeah, that's the biggest example there. You know, Grassley is 92. I think he recently had some health issues. But you know, these are the people that are in there, right, making decisions for the future.
That's right.
So, you know, I think I agree with you there. There has to be a little shift there too, because, you know, I don't know. That's, to me, I don't want to sound like what would you call it, ageist or something like that. But decisions they're making,
term, I don't care. They can call me whatever they want.
Decisions they're making when they're in their 90s are not gonna affect them at all. They're gonna affect, you know, we're still in our 30s, you know, 40s. You know, God willing, we got another 50 years to go here. You know what I mean? It's going to affect us, right? Not just us, and our kids. It's going to affect them. Yeah. So I think that we need to make a shift from that for sure as a country.
Yeah. Yeah. The economy is tanking. We're, you know, these folks have hedges, they have protections. And you know, I think the remedy personally for that issue is, one is, there should be a term limit sentiment in Congress. There needs to be support for term limits. Mm-hmm. You know, there needs to be a new cultural mindset amongst the Congress themselves, these candidates and these actual electeds, that says, I'm in there to do a job and I'm not in there. You know, what is the greatest, I would argue, buffer for anybody who gets into Congress and tries to get basically bullied around to make sure that they vote a certain way, or, you know, you got to vote according to the party or whatever, even if it's negative to your district. To me, the easiest sentiment is go ahead and threaten me to primary me or to raise money against me. Go ahead. I don't care. I'm not here to be a lifer anyways. If I go home, I'm okay with it. I want to see my country better off. But guess what? The moment you primary me, you're going to create a lot of excitement and anger in my district. That means there's going to be a lot of people ready to take my place and ultimately try to run to win back this seat. You're going to have to not just go up against me. The sentiment that I have, I believe, is going to multiply. There'll be more people wanting to. Because I don't want to be in office forever. I really don't. Politics is dirty and it's ugly, and people end up, you know, they're fake relationships. You're in an environment and a cocktail party where everybody acts like you're their best friend, but then all of a sudden, they turn their back on you any chance they get. It's just, it happens. It's just reality. So at the end of the day, I'm going to walk into that environment. It's to do a job. Personally, I really want to see the shift where, and I know it'd be hard, but where Congress people actually are back in their district instead of living in DC their whole career.
Yeah. So, and you know, we've said it on the podcast recently. It's like, when it comes to election cycles, especially this year, right? And we were kind of talking about it a little bit earlier with the ads and all that. It's like, we're, you know, this podcast, it's a small podcast. We don't have any money. We don't have nobody you know, advertising for us, basically. So it's like we have a small podcast and we're doing what we can to inform people. So we're fighting against, you know, billions of dollars that get spent on those kind of ads, right? To try to tell people, no, this, you know, what Biden's saying in his ad, that ain't right. That ain't true. You know, what Adam Schiff said in his ad, that's also not true. And, you know, I can see that same sort of equivalence when it comes to smaller local candidates. And you got those two, you know, the party machines that they have all the money, you know, they have all the money. And if they want to, in a sense, I don't know if they look at it as investing in you, right? I'm sure if they give a candidate, you know, here's a few million dollars to so we could run ads for you. But when you get in, you know, you got to stay in line. So it's like even smaller candidates that want to be, you know, do the right thing, so to speak, or kind of be independent as far as their decision making, which I think every, regardless of your party preference, you should be independent in your thought process and decision making. Yep. You know, all that money, they, you know, you're battling that too.
Yeah. I mean, you're a racehorse. They see you as a commodity to a certain extent. They'll put their money on you. They'll bet on you. If you look the part, if you talk the part, as long as you talk according to the party line sentiment, then there's support there. But, you know, and I'm not in there to make enemies. I'm not trying to be divisive at all. You know, I just know that my country's falling apart and that's where my focus is. I want to see a big change in my district to make sure that that we're making a difference. So it just comes down to me that we got to be at a place where we're short-term focused in office, we're long-term focused in solving the problems of our country. I have my 9-year-old, I have my 3-year-old. I want them to have a future. I'm worried about their future. So to me, it would be an honor to be part of that solution making process and actually restore that future for them, you know.
Yeah, no, that's you know, that's part of the reason we do what we do, right? With trying to do this. You know, it's funny because you know, my daughter, my 9-year-old will ask me, like, you know, what are you gonna do right now when we're gonna do the podcast? So you know, I'm gonna record again. And then, so now when she asks me, she goes, yo, what are you going to do? I just go, I'll go save America. I'll be back.
Do your little part. And it is. It's a big
part, right? Because, you know, it may not be much, but we talk about the ripple effect. And as long as it affects one person, you know, we'll take it. And, you know, it's a tough battle sometimes, it feels like. But that's the thing. Like, we can't give up. And we relate that to, especially here in California, sometimes it does feel like it's a tough battle, but the last thing we can do is give up, right? We can't be demoralized and then take that demoralization and be, that can't be my message to people.
Mm-hmm.
There's
a new, there's kind of this building of this new machine. It seems to be organic, but it's very passionate people that want to do the right thing for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And they're learning along the way, but they're it's like a momentum builder, like you said. And if you add all the drops of water of a wave, they're all independent, but just the same, they become a big wave. They can do a lot of damage, in you know, so obviously making that reference as a good thing. We can do a lot to change the mechanism of politics, and it's thought, I mean, all politics is local, so it's ground up, you know. To shift gears a tiny bit, is, you know, as a small business owner, you know, part of my job is to build something that's going to keep generating revenue, that's going to keep building momentum, growing the exposure of the business, right? Coming up with processes that's going to have healthy employees, doing the job, showing up to work, taking care of my customers. While I do payroll, I also do human resources, right? Because I'm technically making sure I'm preventing liability. So there's all these layers in building something that's successful and that does and that provides a service or a product to my customers. That's the same thing in policy making. You know, it's a momentum builder because you're building relationships. I mean, even campaigning, actually, if you reference it, I'm building relationships throughout the state. People are getting to know me. They're starting to see where my heart is. They obviously realize where my decision making is. Before you know it, they're willing to support me. Before you know it, they're already doing the work of building a support system in their own area for me. And that all is very positive direction, but it only happened by staying consistent to the cause. It takes a lot to build a unified system that actually creates a healthy outcome. That's politics. Mm-hmm. So that's my excitement. And so, you know, when it comes to even being a good policymaker, you learn that through the school of hard knocks, actually failing a lot of the times before you succeed. You know, and I think that's why President Trump was a perfect example of someone who actually, he was in there. People would call him a wrecking ball. He was in there to do a job and he got mm-hmm. it done. You know, he said, look, this has got to happen and this is what I'm going to expect. And he set those expectations and people followed through because there was no questioning. And that's, you know, I when I was in office, I found myself basically kind of being over the shoulder of sometimes my staff, because it wasn't just, hey, I need you to go do this for me, because you delegate a lot as a mm-hmm. policymaker, because you have, I mean, in my county, so small, I really didn't have a huge support system. But you go to some counties, a county supervisor might have 30 staffers, 30, mm-hmm. 30 people working on his campaign, or I'm sorry, in his board membership position. Where I need info on this kind of issue on the district. What is the sentiment of the district? You know, and then you talk to your attorneys to figure out, okay, how I want to come up with this policy. What is it going to take to make it happen? So you start to experience that. Then all mm-hmm. of a sudden you're like, wow, I can actually move the needle in the right direction by making a good decision. And I have the team to help me to do it. That's what I think it's going to take to come up with some pretty solid policymaking in Congress. And I've already lived it, like I said, at the local level. And I firmly believe that to be successful in Congress, you have to have local experience. And so when it comes down to, you know, the, like kind of alluding to a little bit to the economy, you learn to be a hawk over the way that expenditures are happening and making sure that you're implementing policies that are, if there's going to be any government expenditures, that you're measuring what you're spending it on and making sure it's actually providing results to your district, just like a business person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, hopefully soon enough, we're seeing Peter get sworn in, right? That would be awesome. Yeah. You know, to see that happen. So what, to kind of wrap up, when you get into Congress, is there anything that you've thought of as far as like, okay, I'm gonna make this a priority or I want to attack this first? Is there anything that you've kind of thought about?
Well, thinking about the top-down issues that are being created, I've fixated definitely my time on what it would look like to restore power to have, you know, because this is not just about local, but to a certain extent, restoring the check and balance and the separation of powers. Mm-hmm. All that to be said is I came up with a policy idea and I want to see it play through. I've actually been thinking a lot about it, about the different layers to it. But I actually mentioned it. We just had a candidate forum in San Benito County at the Benito Link Forum. It's actually, the videos will be coming out pretty soon of the actual, responses from the candidates, because it was some local races, but they had us at the beginning, the congressional races. So it was me and the three. Technically, there was two other candidates there, even though there's five candidates in this race. But anyways, my point is, I wanted to provide a solution that I thought makes sense, that I think would be supported by Congress because of the issues that we're having with the lack of separation of powers and the lack of, of respect for federalism. And, you know, when you have states like California that are doing sanctuary status, violating federal law when it comes to immigration. You know, when you have DAs that are no longer enforcing laws, that you have, you know, Soros-funded DAs, you're seeing a lot of brokenness in the process. So anyways, back to my point. I call this bill the Preserve Rural America Act. So my idea by God's grace, I would say you see a lot of these urban cities, right? The centralization of power in these big urban structures in the state. You think of Sacramento, you think of San Francisco, you think of San Diego, LA County, all these power centers of Democrat influence. And this is not a party issue, right? This is not about that. But I just mentioned that definitely technically, you know, I've heard this even from Democrats. Part of the problem is it's a one party state, separate point. Yeah. But anyways, but what I'm alluding to is that's also where the money goes to, you know, that's where all the support goes to for addressing issues, right? For funding, for mental health, for homelessness. The issues are growing in these big cities, so the money is going in those directions, which is starving technically the small rural areas, you know, in their communities. I mean, most rural areas are very fiscally conservative. If you do the numbers and check their budget, they hold on to what they have because they don't have much. Mm-hmm. So they're very prudent or frugal in how they spend on roads and all the issues that they need to address. So the idea of the Preserve Rural America Act is they're still very valuable. I said it on the dais when I was a county supervisor. We give a lot of respect to big cities, and that's fine, but we give very little to no respect to small rural communities. You know, yet we are the resource counties of the state. Mm-hmm. Technically, that part of the brokenness of that, another quick tangent, is the 17th Amendment that doesn't the Senate, the seat that Dianne Feinstein gave up basically when she passed away, and these other candidates are trying to run for. Those were resource-driven positions. Technically, the state Senate's supposed to be resource-driven because it's regional. These positions are more regional rather than population-driven. The reason why I mention that is there's now less of a focus on respecting the fact that, like, San Benito County has minerals, and they, you know, like, you have certain counties like Shasta that, you know, they have huge runoffs of water because of the snowpack. You have Monterey County and San Benito County that are big agricultural centers. We feed the whole world, so we are resource counties. Yet we get little to no respect from the state or the feds. So my idea says, how about we actually come up with a different funding mechanism to say is, it doesn't matter because of your population, but because of the value of your resources and the fact that we want to preserve the rural center, the hometown feel, the fact that, you know, you know your neighbors, and we also care about the fact that you're providing a valuable asset to the rest of the country with the resources that you provide. We need to preserve your resource resources. And ultimately, that means we also need to make sure you have the proper funding for infrastructure and the things that are necessary to manage your county. So we need to come up with a different ratio. And so that was basically my idea. And I know that was a long-winded statement, so thanks for being patient with me.
That's all good.
But that was basically my idea of, let's start to show respect for the small counties, the rural counties, just as much as we show respect for the big cities. I don't want to see us urbanize the whole state is the bottom line.
Yeah. No, and I think that makes sense, because it's like, if you're giving, for example, San Francisco, you know, way more money than you're giving Salinas, right? And obviously it's like, okay, you go bigger city, more people, yada, yada. But it's like also, it's like, if they're getting this much money and, okay, here, this much, let's say, I don't know, 15 million, to random number, is for homelessness. And, you know, you come back, whether it's a year later, a couple years later, and it's time to give money again, and you say, well, how is the homelessness problem doing? It's like, it got worse, so we gave you $15 million, and it got worse, so now you got to fix it with $10 million.
That's right.
You know, that starts to drop down, and that $5 million they lost goes to Salinas. Yep. Goes to, you know what I mean? Like, There should be some. It's kind of like saying merit based, but like performance based by city.
Yeah. Meritocracy, 100%. Well, and to your point, who is paying for that $15 million for San Francisco to get? It's not just San Francisco's tax dollars coming back to them.
Yeah.
It's the small counties, the rural counties. We all pay taxes, but all that money is shifting to these big cities. We get very little of it. Where's the taxation without representation? If you're not going to help us, then don't take our money. And that would be part of the component of the Preserve Rural America Act. Part of my component would put the burden on the state and the feds to say, look, if you need to come up with a formula that actually respects the tax dollars of the small rural counties, if you're not going to help them, then you can't take their money. Then they get to keep their money and they figure out how to manage their own communities. And I think they'll do a better job than the big cities, to be honest with you. That's my honest assumption. It's a theory and I have reasons for that, but without getting into that weeds, but it's just the reality that there's just this centralization of power that's happening through these big power centers that I mentioned, these big counties, and it's stripping these local counties. I mean, when you have Monterey County, San Benito County providing food for the world, and it's also, you know, along the Inland Valley, and it's, you know, so it's not just our counties, but these are still rural counties also. Yet somehow we have more food being imported into our state than we're exporting. That's just crazy to me. I mean,
Peter. these guys that are living in these rural areas, most of them are farmers, right? You're saying they're feeding the world. They're responsible for climate change. That's how they see it. So it makes sense why they're making those people the bad guys. They want to put people back in the
cities, right? That's what, and to your point, Christian, if they're the bad guys, so are we. Oh, by the way, so are the politicians, because guess what? Right. It's not just cows that fart. Human beings do also. Oh, that's right. They're trying to use this climate change modeling that's only on a spreadsheet that has no real measurement against the environment itself, where they're actually testing these ideas. Oh, and they're going to come up with a policy where they're going to tax you for it. Oh, and it's kind of convenient that it's not these rural counties that are getting the benefit. These big cities are getting the benefit of your cap and trade taxes. Right. They're taxing your gas because it's a big fuel emitter. I just saw, and this is why doing your homework definitely matters and understanding kind of the politics of it. I was going through the IIJA, the Infrastructure and Investment and Jobs Act. That was something that Joe Biden got, well, technically the leadership then got passed. Obviously, he signed it into law, and it was a $1.3 trillion stimulus. Guess how much money went, because this is for infrastructure, right? So they have this ideas and they added this internet into infrastructure, whatever. People can debate that issue. But, you know, the obvious ones are bridges, roads, right? Things that are definitely infrastructure. That's fine. Regardless, it's a spending bill. It's debt. And then the other component is, guess how much was actually allocated to small rural counties it was $25 million. Do the math. $25 million off of $1.3 million? That's probably less than 1%. Or less than, it's roughly a percentage if you think about 1.3 trillion. And then when you, I was paying attention to the committee hearing that just happened actually in February, I think, of 2023, when they were actually vetting the implementation of this process and how much funding was going out and, you know, what had happened thus far. In that committee, they had a memo that they all, you know, they realized that the public was coming to find out the memo by the president, Joe Biden, who actually said, oh, by the way, that money that we had allocated to the rural communities, don't give it to them. Like, cut it out. We're not here to, basically, they had no desire to fix roads. If you think about the issues of the small counties, they have the most miles of roads that they don't have the funds to fix. There's probably a formula out there or some kind of a way that they've measured it. I'm pretty sure local counties can measure it anyways. It's called the pavement PID, pavement improvement index or something like that. It's basically a measurement of how beat up your road is. There's an improvement index basically that measures how beat up your roads are. Most rural counties have garbage roads.
Does Hollister know that this program is going around? Does
Santa Clara have that tool?
Yeah, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, they all measure it, and so San Bernardino County has really bad roads, and you know that these rural counties are struggling. I mean, the only ones that I have seen, though, to be honest, though, that the roads are decent or pretty good are the roads around some of these tourist counties because they can afford it, right? Yosemite area, all these tourist areas, Monterey County, they need good roads because the tourists are not going to like on beat up. You know, they realize, obviously, they have to prioritize those funds. So, but it just points to the reality that there's obvious things that I've been paying attention to that others are paying attention to, that it's like, well, and think about the climate idea that you just, or the climate point that you just mentioned, Christian. It reminds me of when I sat in a committee hearing, in a committee on the Board of Supervisors. It's called the Mobility Partnership. We're actually partnered with other counties. We were talking, it was during the COVID times. They were talking about transit, increasing transit services. And in that conversation, I said, hey, wait, so we're talking about transit because we're trying to decarbonize, supposedly, right? We don't want so many vehicles on the road because of fossil fuels and emissions and gas. Why would they care to fix the roads? Because that's going to fixing the roads is going to increase the motivation to drive on those roads. And by default, it's going to have a negative impact, supposedly, on the climate because of the emissions. And literally the guy said, yeah, you're right. We really don't want to fund the roads. So they're taking our SB1 tax dollars and they don't even want to fix the roads anyways. So what does that tell you? Like they have little pockets of money that are just like toys to them, I guess. And they're spending it on certain roads probably, but in general, the motivation, because the philosophy of the climate changes person, it says, no, we need to get rid of, we need to get rid of fossil fuel vehicles. So actually, people shouldn't be driving roads. They should be going on a bullet train that's never going to get built, and it costs too much money. Yeah, it's just ludicrous, wow. Right? So, anyways, that's just the reality of what these guys. You have to pay attention to those details to know it.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, Peter, I mean. It's good to have you on. It's good to talk to you. You know, it had been a while since we talked, so it's good talking to you again. You know, do you have any kind of events or anything coming up that's on the schedule where people can kind of get to know you more or anything like that?
So honestly, right now we're kind of in this lull because it's just before the March 5th primary. I mean, outside of every weekend, me canvassing, going out there and door knocking with my volunteers. But after the primary, I do have a lot of things being planned. We'll definitely have some fundraisers, some public events. I'll definitely be more public, more. Yeah, it's just we had an early primary, so it kind of came up on all of us. I mean, I really am not seeing crazy amount of activity from any candidate, really. Mm-hmm. Besides the paid media and ads, which all of us are doing. So, but to your point is maybe we can check in once again after the primary and I can mention a lot of the excitement that we've got going on.
Yeah. We'll send Christine out there with this suit and a microphone. Awesome. We'll do what we can to be out there, man. So yeah, we'll definitely after the primaries, we'll get in touch and you know, whatever you got coming up and, you need a couple crazy guys there, you know, you can hit us. You can hit us up.
I will for sure. Yeah, we have a lot of excitement coming up.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Again, you know, support Peter. Even if he's not in your district, like I said, his vote can make a huge impact on the nation. So, you know, his website is scrolling right there at the bottom, HernandezForCongress.com. You can visit it there. You can donate to him. You can find out ways to volunteer. You know, I think it's important that we get people that want to go in there and represent us and not the party and not put the focus completely on that. So, you know, Peter, thank you for coming on. And like I said, man, hopefully, you know, time goes by fast, right? You know, next thing you know, it's February 2025, but, you know, hopefully one day we're seeing you get sworn in and, you know,
awesome.
We know
listeners.
It's been awesome.
I'll invite you guys out there. It'll be fun to have you guys out there.
Yeah. We'll scare
listeners
out there.
listeners, if you're listening, if you want to keep your in and out, vote Peter Hernandez. You're gonna lose it like Oakland.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
To keep your in and out.
They lost in and out, Walmart, and Denny's. We're talking about Oakland. Oakland,
that's
get it together.
Backbone. That's the backbone.
But anyway, yeah, vote for Peter. Well, thank you for tuning in, and you know, it's always great talking to you, man.
God bless you guys. It was good talking to you.
Peace be with you.
You too. Amen.